today's episode, I'm talking with casting director Heidi Levin. Heidi cast The Artist, which is up for a nomination as Best Picture in this year's Academy Awards. This was a great but long conversation, so I don't want to take up too much time yapping away. I want you guys to hear everything Heidi had to talk about, which includes how she casts The Artist, how she finds actors, audition tips, common things actors need to avoid, her iPhone and Android app, Actor Genie, and tons more. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers. Every little click does help. And don't forget, we also sell casting director and agent mailing labels and have a bunch of other cool actor services available. You can check all of that out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Heidi.
First of all, congratulations on The Artist. Man, it's so good. So when you first read that script, did you know how, I guess, special it was going to be or how
it was? You know, it was definitely not your run-of-the-mill kind of project from the get-go, and I was given this really beautiful script, which was much more like, not a manuscript, but it was in between being like a novella and a screenplay. And it had some pictures and illustrations of kind of what he was thinking about. And it was immediately clear, like, that Michelle, you know, had a very distinct vision for his movie. And so it made it really lovely to work on because he sort of knew exactly what he wanted to do. And I have to say that the movie itself is really close to what he had originally conceived of in the screenplay. And that's also, like, that's an interesting thing because often you'll work on a movie and then it finishes and you're like, and you see the movie and you're like, wow, that was really quite different from what I might have read. Uh-huh. But in this case, I think it was really, really similar. And it was very much conceived fully and realized from what his initial, you know, thought was about what the movie was going to be and who the characters were. And everything was... It didn't evolve. It really was more like a completion of a dream.
Yeah. You cast some really wonderful character actors, Beth Grant and Missy Pyle, yeah, and Ed Lauder, and I mean, Joel Murray. I could go on. But
yeah,
even though I think they're great, I mean, what's the thing that they did at the audition that kind of set them apart from the other actors auditioning for the roles?
You know, there was really a wonderful actors coming in for this who connected to the material, and I think it kind of had a self-selected group of actors to a certain extent. Like, I went after the character actors that I had known for over 20, 30 years. I started as an assistant for Risa Brayman Garcia and Billy Hopkins, and I started in New York, and I started in the theater, and I really, Risa and Billy were amazing, you know, really knowledgeable casting directors and directors themselves. And a lot of the things that I learned in terms of casting, I really kind of came out of that New York experience. And a lot of the actors that I brought in were people that I'd known for 20 years. I'd cast them in other things. I'd known them before. So it was really lovely to have an opportunity to cast a movie with so many actors that you actually have knowledge of their work. Like, you've known them, you've worked with them, or you've auditioned them. And what really, I think... There were other, you know, it's always hard. You know, you're an actor, so there's always more than one actor for a role. Almost always. Mm-hmm. There's choices. And I think to myself sometimes about all the other wonderful actors that I wasn't able to give a part to, but I know they were just as good. But there was something about each of these actors that physically also fit the image of what the director was looking for. And we really were very careful to try to find actors that would feel like they would look correct in the role, as well as be able to improvise but not be the hammy kind of actor. Because there's a whole sense of, oh, it's a silent film, so everything is bigger and it's mime and it's like, you know, much more in the style of, you know, what people think about, like Charlie Chaplin movies or things that have much more of a heightened sort of acting style. Uh-huh. And this was really much more in the other classic silent film kind of genre, like films by like Murnau, like if you look at a film like Sunrise or something, the actors are quite natural. I mean, it's a much more of a naturalistic sort of style, but they're also highly aware of, you know, how they're using their body and their expression. But I think acting is often is, you know, you say acting is also is communicated through the eyes. Because it's really what comes out is truly the spirit behind you. And that's what we always look for, right? Mm-hmm. We're not only looking for people who can deliver great lines. But we're looking at people who can deliver great lines and that we can look at them and understand them and sort of come, that they're breathing another life into it. So it's really about what kind of soul you bring to it.
Yeah.
And I think all of these actors, you know, I could give you, you know, five or six other people who didn't get the part and were good. They were really good. But in each of these cases, each of these people had this really specific choices in their work, and you can see if you go, I don't know, maybe you're referring to those actors specifically because we went online and looked at the New York Times.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, all those auditions were really great, and when you see them cut together, they're very similar,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah.
To what you saw, like what I did in that audition room is kind of what they did a lot. And I think that they were actors who were like smart actors. They sort of first, Missy Pyle sometimes tells this story when we're doing the Q&As, how like the first time when she was auditioning, it was really strange. And it was like, I did it with my associate, Michael Sanford. I worked with him on this movie. He's a commercial casting director. And I did it in his studio. And you know, as an actor, when you go into commercials, they're very different than going in on a theatrical, right? And
the
environment is different, everything about it. And it's kind of weird for me because I'm much more like, I have a little homey environment and I don't have a factory and I don't like to have like a million people waiting there, and I want the actor to do their best work, so I want them to be comfortable. And in Michael's office, it's a little bit more, it's on that commercial side, you know, there's a lot of people in the hall, there's a lot of other things going on, so it disorients the actor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So then they came into the room and we have like this really large studio, and a lot of those actors weren't necessarily, you know, quote-unquote commercial actors, so they sort of had to adjust to it. But the reason why I wanted to do it there is because he had a really large space that we could utilize. And I feel like because it was a silent movie, I wanted the actors to be free to use their bodies as well. You know, they needed to have, it's not sitting in a chair and just, you know, acting.
Yeah.
They needed to be able to physically move around. And I think that was a key for the movie a lot, is that even in that, I mean, even in those, you know, a little moment, like I love Bill Fagerbakke. He has this great moment when George Valentine goes to the window and he looks at the tuxedo and there's a cop who comes up and he kind of winks at him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just does this amazing kind of, like, sense of, I'm the authority cop, but I have a little bit of a feeling for you because you're now nobody. Like, you kind of get this weird, and I feel like, that was something that was not only physical, it was also interior. He had the physicality of being this huge guy, you know, and then there was, like, sort of this intimacy that he could convey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what I was looking for in these auditions were really people who could convey without having to do so much. But, you know, they didn't have to, like, have 1,000 words to explain who they were.
Yeah.
They still were talking like it was a regular audition. I mean, I was like, so Missy Pyle, you know, says how she first came in and she was kind of being broad and she didn't know if she can talk, so she was like acting everything out. And we're like, it's okay, just talk, you know. And finally, that was then very freeing because they didn't have the lines to worry about. So they could just kind of improvise it. Even though we had scenes cut out with each side was, you know, here's the situation. But it was kind of the ultimate acting exercise because you were improvising.
Yeah.
And you didn't, and you had to know that you weren't going to be relying on your words. You definitely were relying on your actions. And those actions didn't necessarily have to be, like, huge.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had to be an action or an interior soul, like Bill Fagerbakke, a wink or whatever. You know, there was just something that you had to feel from watching.
I interviewed James Cromwell a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing.
Isn't he awesome? It's so
yeah.
nice, too.
Yeah, he's so nice. And, I mean, and he did an amazing... I mean, I've been on panels with him, too, because he talks about, you know, sort of that less is more and being able to be that actor and be present and not feel like you have to do a thousand
uh-huh.
things. And I think that that's what's really challenging for an actor in this kind of work.
When I was talking to him, he mentioned that he had a streak of bad auditions when he was early on in his career. Not now, obviously. But he said when he finally got hired, he said that he asked the director, "What did I do in this audition that you gave me this job?" And then the director told him it had nothing to do with his audition. It was just whether he kind of fit the picture that the person casting had in their head. Do you think that's the case mostly?
I think it, you know, it really depends, because some directors have a very specific idea of what they are looking for physically, and sometimes it will go completely in a different direction, where there, you know, you can make a suggestion. I mean, I'm working on something right now with Jean-Pierre Jeunet, the director who did Amélie,
oh.
And there's a movie, and in the movie there's this character that's written as, you know, sort of an uptight man, and I think... because he had this in mind with one particular actor that it then couldn't work out with for various reasons. So then we were like, well, what about a woman? And that could really change this character, but it could really work. And it did. You know, and he is going to cast a woman, I think, in this one part. But so it kind of, it really, it's a case-by-case basis. Some, I think in terms of the artist, we had to be quite true to the screenplay. Because we were casting types to a certain extent. You know what I mean? The
yeah.
character, there wasn't enough time to establish the maid or the nurse. They had to feel like that's what they were. And so you were sticking into that mold. Whereas in another kind of movie where there is time for a character to evolve, then you can sort of sometimes play around with, oh, well, wait a minute, that'd be really interesting if this was an African-American, because it will bring a different kind of intonation to this character than if we cast it in a different way. So it really, it's case by case, where I think that a director is often looking for somebody to bring that character to life as they wrote it, and then there's the director who's looking for someone to bring it to life and surprise them in a new way,
uh-huh.
and they're open for that. So, you know, Wim Wenders is a director that I worked with a lot, and he's very much like, he would rather probably meet an actor than just have an actor come in and just read for him. You know, and that, and then there's the directors that they sort of would much rather just see the character that they wrote and don't really want to talk to the actor as much because they've got a very specific game plan. As a casting director, I think we're trying to always find this balance of the character and the person.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that any actor brings something of themselves to a character. And even though we talk about what's a character actor, and the artist is a great example of great character acting, there's an amazing number of actors. A character actor to me is defined by the actor that you don't recognize from film to film, because they completely become that character.
Yeah.
It's not like, I think, you know, a leading man, a George Clooney, he's very much always feels like a George Clooney, like you're watching George Clooney, even though he's so strong now as an actor that he's able to find those differences in the role. But he's not ever going to completely transform, or unless he took on a role that would be that transformative. It feels like first of all, he's such a great leading man. It would be almost a shame to, like, lose the Clooney in the character.
Uh-huh.
You know, you need that. The same thing, you know, like certain actors who have that really strong leading man or leading woman quality. Whereas somebody who's, like, you know, the apex of great actor can do anything, like, is Meryl Streep, who's able to transform herself completely.
Yeah.
But she's, like, an amazing, astonishing talent. Many, on smaller roles, you're just constantly, like, trying to look at, I just want to buy who that is. And you don't want their personality to overwhelm what the character is, because it's going to take you away from the movie.
Yeah.
So that's why sometimes on Cameo, small on movies where you're asked to cast cameos, it's because they want to see that famous person there. Not that they're looking just for the character. Mm-hmm. They want that presence, that aura, that star to do a cameo. Yeah. Because it's going to bring something else into the movie for whatever reason, for the, you know, from the producer's point of view or even from the director. Like, it's fun. Like, I think Malcolm McDowell in The Artist, that's a cameo, right?
Yeah.
He's not doing anything extraordinary. But isn't it fun to see Malcolm McDowell in the movie?
Yeah, and you almost miss it. I know.
So to me, that was a case where we were not just casting somebody to be the butler. We were casting somebody who was well-known. Because I think it kind of was kind of fun. It just sort of popped.
Yeah.
And he's sort of like just this, you know, he doesn't have to do anything. He sits there, he smiles, and it's like, oh, that's really cool, you know? And then what I find myself when I watch Malcolm McDowell in that movie, I kind of imagine, oh, let's make the movie of the butler, Malcolm McDowell. You know what I mean? He's just the butler.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really what you're meant to think as an audience, because he's there sitting there and casting in the movie, and it's like, there's all these archetypal characters, and there's different people coming up, and it's like, oh, that must be the guy who gets the butler movie, you know? and I think it really works, where it's like, yeah, I could have had Ed Lauder play that part, but then it wouldn't have the same, because we only had that one moment for this character. I wanted to find somebody who would live beyond the moment,
yeah.
You know? And when you cast somebody famous in that little moment, then it creates another thought in the audience mind of, like, why is he there? Is there something else there? And maybe, you know, and that kind of, I think, puts another layer on the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that kind of casting, you know, could work. Sometimes if you had, you know, a super famous person even in Missy Pyle's role or in Penelope Ann Miller's role, then you would also, the worry sometimes is like, well, wait a minute, there's not as much going on in that storyline. Why is that? Your expectation is higher what's going to happen. If Julia Roberts was playing, you know, either one of those roles, it just wouldn't have worked.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, I was so happy that they let me just cast this movie, because in, you know, today's day and age, it's always like, okay, what name is selling the movie? And sometimes you can work on these movies with a million great names, but if the movie's not good, it doesn't matter. And ultimately, this movie was about, you know, the two leads and the movie. And everybody else just completely strengthens the movie. And they're just perfect without being overcast.
Uh-huh.
Like, if we had cast, you know, it's questionable how it would have worked if we had bigger stars in some of these cameos. Because I feel like they would have taken you out a little bit, or you would have had expectations that there would be more to them.
How do you find your actors?
Well, I find actors in the traditional ways, like by looking at, you know, the breakdowns and Actors Access Now casting. And I actually even found an actor in this movie through Actor Genie, which is the app
Wow.
I created.
Uh-huh.
An actress had contacted me through Actor Genie just about the app, and her name is Adria Tenner, and she plays John Goodman's secretary. She's in the movie quite a bit. And I got to meet her, and I started bringing her in for auditions. So I've met a couple of actors now through the app, because there's a highly interesting, proactive actor community who are out there researching and doing all the things that I want them to do. Because I want my casting director that wants everybody to know as much as they can about what's going on out there. Because we all have to be our own advocates, I think.
Absolutely.
So I totally am always... I'm open to new people. Obviously, I have, like, my years of experience and, you know, trust relationships with agents and managers who say, you got to meet this person. They're just new and they're fantastic. So there's always a combination of things going on. But I think with the advent of the internet, there is much more access, both ends of it, from us and from them. And I think that they still have to really work hard to distinguish yourself. But I think as an actor today, you can utilize all of these different tools and try and get yourself out there. And, you know, if somebody sends me a fantastic website, that's really going to be helpful. The problem is most actors still haven't sort of caught up with what they can do with that technology today.
Yes.
And it's hard, you know. I understand. Like, a lot of people have websites, but they're not good.
Yeah, they're awful, aren't they?
Yeah, I think I want to do like a whole... I want to do some kind of a whole session on try to have what it is that you need. Because it's like, I in some ways, I want to go back to an old black and white photograph. I would rather see that. Something that's good, that's something that shows me who you are.
Yeah.
Rather than this glitzy over, you know, fluffed up picture and then website that looks really cheesy. And
has music blaring. And
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the one thing you see in successful actors?
I think that they're in it for the long term. You're in it, you know, the job of the actor is you have to have training. I really believe in that wholeheartedly. I look for actors with good theater training. I really feel like that was the beginning for me where I found actors and understood the process. And it's essential for me to know that an actor has technique. Because you can come in and just have natural instinct, but instinct really only in the end will go that far. You know, and so I want an actor who is willing to, like, work the long haul and that's not just looking for success, like, immediately. I think we live in a world of, you know, faster, cheaper, now. And I think that for the successful actor, really to build, it's about building a long career. And it's about building it from the ground up. So that means starting with kind of training, then doing smaller roles, getting your feet wet, moving up the ladder. I mean, I think a tremendous success story in that regard, which to me would be Melissa McCarthy. You know, she started, I knew her because she was my kid's babysitter. I started to bring her in for auditions. She never asked. She never, like, was that kind of person. I just thought, wow, she's kind of funny, and bet she'd be really good. And then every single audition she would nail, and it could be one line. And she worked her way up. And it just is, it's amazing because what she's done is really transformative, I think, you know. And I love seeing those kinds of stories because those people truly earned their success.
Yeah.
And then ultimately that has so much, you know, much, much, much longer shelf life.
Uh-huh.
Even if, you know, like the actresses like Meryl Streep and Glenn Close started in the theater and then, you know, they really, you know, you remember that moment of Meryl Streep in Deer Hunter, you know? It might have been two or three scenes, but they were really wonderful. And it's like, you know, and then it, obviously, you know, she was really special and went on to get, you know, big parts quite quickly. But there's so many wonderful actors out there that, you know, sort of had to kick around for a while. Mark Ruffalo is another actor I worked with for years. And, I mean, I would always bring him for auditions, and I could just never get him cast. And I just was like, I don't understand. Why don't I see this? This is, like, an amazing actor. And I just think that then he went to New York, and he did theater, and, like, everything transformed for him. And he, you know, and I think he's amazing. And I, you know, watched him sort of grow into being that star. And I love those actors that I remember that really did work their way up from the ground up and have truly, you know, stayed in it for a long time.
What's the one most common thing you see actors do to shoot themselves in the foot when they're in your room?
I think that they blow an audition by saying often, oh, I just got the size, or I'm not really ready, or, you know, I'm not really sure what you want. I mean, you need to go into that. First of all, I always try to give my actors enough time to have the material. Unfortunately, what happens is the agent or the manager, by the time it gets to the actor, it kills me. They might not have had it for a week, even though I set up their audition a week ahead of time. It, you know, that kills me. But I think that no matter what, an actor shouldn't go into a room unless they're ready to be in the room. The audition is an invitation. It is not a nasty thing. It's if you chose the act to be an actor, that's part of the job. And you need to go into that, you know, confident and not needy. When an actor comes in with, like, their suitcases because they just, you know, got kicked out of their apartment by their boyfriend, like, that's a whole history. I don't really need to know. It was fun, but, you know. But you really, yeah. But it really, like, the thing about it is I think that you have to look at it as, like, a serious job interview, like anything, and you need to go in prepared. And the thing that an actor shoots himself in the foot with is not being prepared. There's no reason they should not come in if they're not ready to do it.
Yeah.
Because that really just, it won't serve them well, it won't serve the project well, it just, you know, be prepared, be a good Boy Scout. You know, that's kind of a no-brainer, but it's amazing how many people don't take it full advantage. I mean, there's a lot of people who do. I don't want to say that most actors just show up, and I know for TV pilot season and things like that, it's really difficult for them because they're running around and they don't get enough time for anything. But I think that an actor will do fine as long as they make the choice and they're coming in and bringing their choice into the room. I don't think they should come in and always ask, what do you want? Because then it's like, then I don't know, what are you really thinking?
Tell me about Actor Genie. How'd you get the idea?
I saw these actors coming out of, like, these fancy graduate programs with smartphones, but had no clue about what was really going on, like, who the players were, what was casting, well, how do I know what to look for? And I wanted to, when I was starting out as a young casting assistant, I used to look at, like, Variety every week, had the production report, so I could figure out what movies were going into production, and maybe I could try to find a job that way. And I felt like it would be really great if people just knew what was going on so that they could research it. It's not going to give them the job, and it's not a submission tool, but it's a great resource that every actor should have because it's a shorthand. And it also helps for agents and managers because they can also look at it as a quick shorthand. It's not releasing breakdowns, but it's releasing what I like to say, you know, the thumbnail of what you need to know. And I just felt like we live in this time of great information and access. Why not put good information out there? It kills me when I see all these websites out there for actors that are soliciting their money, and, like, half of them, they're claiming that they have auditions, and they're not real auditions, and they're not really good information. So I really wanted to have something that would be solid, that would be true, you know, would be connected, and it would have good information, and that people could then act upon it. And so I came up with that, and then I wanted to share the inspiration of so many great actors and writers and directors that I've worked with, because I feel like everybody needs a little boost every day. So I try to put a quote every day from a working actor, writer, director, or casting director that will give them some kind of something to chew on for the day. You know, those are interesting things for people to know, that they're not out there alone, that even if you've made it, you know, there's people out there who've went through some kind of process that young actors or new actors to the business are going through now. So I really was hoping that I could create something that would help people, and at the same time, obviously for me, doing independent films, it's really tough. We're all getting paid less money. I mean, actors are suffering from, you know, how many times do we, I'm only offering scales. So often it's ridiculous to people who've worked for 20, 30 years and had a rate, and it doesn't matter in today's day and age because the movies that we made for $20 million don't exist anymore. So they're movies, I mean, this movie is a complete iconoclast, right? I mean, here's a movie for French filmmaker making a silent film, and it was like an $8 million movie. That's completely rare. And you know, and it's not even like we didn't pay anybody any real money, but we tried to be respectful of people and give them at least something a little bit more than scale if they had a larger role. But it, again, we really weren't able to meet anybody's quote. And so as myself, too, I'm not making what my supposed quote was. So I wanted to come up with another business idea that would help sustain me being able to continue to work in independent film, which I love. Because I feel like I'm working constantly for nothing, which everybody else is, too. I'm not alone.
Thank you so much, Heidi, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you again for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.